This is the second annual Summer League Ricky, and Spike isn't here. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky and LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. On this episode, I, Mike, alone, don my journalist cap and attend my seventh Summer League in Las Vegas. I get in the scrums. I ask a few questions, I interview some other folks at Summer League, and give you my exclusive Lakers fan girlfriend's very saucy take on Kawhi and Paul George going to the Clippers. But first, and it's very cool that I get to say this, run the jewels.
We are the murderers there. There with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the kush. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Chew runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Mike Levin, by myself, and I have no idea what to say on this thing. Spike handles the transitions. It's late, and I'm tired, but I'm putting this together for you guys. But I will get out of here quick, so I will let you know the order of what's to come. What follows here is a selection of clips from interviews I did at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas, Nevada at Summer League after their first and second games last weekend. You will hear some music, some, you know, wandering around and people saying stuff. It's not, as you know, the audio is fun. This is journalism, guys. Okay. Hardcore, real deal journalism. I'm holding a thing and pointing it at someone's face. So deal with it. First up is Sixers Summer League coach Connor Johnson, and then Norvell Pell, and then Matisse Thybulle, and then Zaire, and then Shake, and they just kind of run into each other. I just sort of picked all the cool quotes, whatever. Enjoy it. This is just me. Here we go.
I thought there were possessions out there where we looked tough, where Zaire was doing a heck of a job. Matisse was doing a heck of a job. And those guys are big-time perimeter defenders. And then having Norvell and the size of having Chris back there, we were blowing a lot of things up. We were playing in a physical, aggressive style that I thought helped us there. And it's the sort of stuff that will carry over the way Coach Brown wants to play. I thought Matisse's on-the-ball defense was the highlight for me. I think we all know coming in, he's great blocking shots. He's great with his hands. But he was doing a great job getting into the ball, fighting over screens, blowing things up. Thought that was really encouraging. I thought he made some good plays offensively, some extra passes, finding some people. But I think it was a great start. We just got to learn to build on it.
Two-way contract meant a lot. You know, showing that I'm improving steadily and I'm on the right track to getting the final goal of getting on the roster. And I think the impact of me playing last year and the way I ended out the season and all that played a major role in me getting the two-way.
Have they been telling you to work on defense in the perimeter as far as are you switching one through four?
They want me to protect the rim a lot. I can guard the perimeter, but protecting the rim, that's my strongest point, so I just stay back there and let everybody else do what they got to do and direct the traffic to me, and I'll finish the rest.
Talk about your chemistry with Shake since you guys played together a bit last year.
Money train, yeah, man. He's hard to guard by himself one-on-one, and then I'm coming setting the screen. It's another step, another situation. And that chemistry between me and him is just like playground. It's like it clicks automatically. It's just like playing in the backyard, and it's amazing. It's just amazing being able to set the screen rolling, knowing that he either is going to have the layup or throw that lob. So it's always being aware and being ready.
I mean, I really didn't go in with any sort of expectation. I just wanted to get out there and be able to do a couple of the things that I know I'm capable of. So for me, I turned the ball over more than I wanted to. I made some mistakes attacking the hoop and just rotating on defense. But what I really wanted to be able to see out of myself was just that I was able to get in the right place defensively a couple times, just be able to build on that. Because once you do it a couple times, you can shave out the mistakes one by one, and then that's how you get into like that postseason form.
So with that, is this a good building? You know, a good place to evaluate yourself and feel good about it, though?
Yeah, I mean. What do we say? Trust the process?
Yeah,
so, I mean,
yeah.
For me, this is like, it's day one. And I think for a lot of the guys, just playing together for the first time in a real game, I guess day one. We knew it wasn't going to be pretty. And we were pretty happy with how we started those first three quarters. And I know for myself, I was happy with some of the things I did, but overall, we definitely got work to do.
How much free reign do you have to take those risks and gamble and play a little safety versus staying with your man when you hold protests?
I mean, we talked to the coaches. Like, they give me the freedom to make plays, but at the same time, I have to be solid in what I do. And I think I made a lot of mistakes this game, and that's going to allow me to learn going into the next one just what I can and can't do and how far I can really push it. So, yeah, they give me the freedom, the green light on defense because they know what I'm capable of, and then it's just a trust thing to know that I can still play within the team defense.
Your father's a very vocal fan. We can hear him, but do you hear him as well?
Unfortunately, yes. Yes, I do.
Try and tune him out, or
I try, but I, and you, like you said, you heard him. It's hard.
Yeah, it was crazy. My legs looked like sticks about 6 to 9 months ago, so I had to really work. My kinesiologist Andre, he helped me get my bounce back and my footwork and all that back. I feel like I improved my all-around game and just out there having fun. Last summer league, I was too focused and tried to do everything at once, but I just played my game and had fun.
Seemed like you were having a little fun out there, being by the camera a little bit.
Yeah.
That's confidence your teammates are giving you,
if
that's just you having
a... I don't know. I've been like that since college, maybe even high school, but like if I do some like a little nasty dunk, I like look in the camera because it's just there. I even do it when we work out. I just be looking. I don't know why.
You just keep fighting, man. I already know the type of shooter I am. I know I can knock down shots. It's just about going out there and doing it. I'm not going to lose confidence in myself. I'm going to put them up regardless because that's what my teammates and coaches expect, and that's what they encourage me to do, so that's what I'm going to keep doing. I'm going to be all right. Yeah, I think, you know, for one, we're all long and we're all active, so just doing that, I mean, we can switch pretty much anytime we're in a pick and roll situation or a dribble handoff situation, so just being able to, you know, cause problems for the offense is what we're good at.
We take a break from the thing that you're listening to talk about our sponsor, Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. I am dog sitting right now for John Gonzalez and Colleen Wolf. They have two dogs. Their names are Dasher and Blitzen. And I love them. I'm doing it for a couple weeks, and they're great. Here's the thing. They don't have a Big Barker dog bed to sleep in. So they're jumping on the bed to try to sleep with me and my girlfriend. They're, laying on the ground. I'm laying with Dasher right now. I'm looking at his bed. It's trash. I'm peeing on it. Everyone's peeing on the dog bed because it's the bad one. Big Barker dog beds are not bad. As dogs get older, especially big dogs, they develop arthritis. And sleeping on these fake, cheap, bullshit, pee-infested dog beds is terrible for them. Dasher laying on the ground, it's bad for him. He's sleeping on the hard floor because John and Colleen, they don't care about him. They're making them sleep on the ground. It's terrible. Don't be like John and Colleen. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. That is bigbarker.com/Ricky to get your Big Barker bed and get the free Ricky upgrade, which is a cover, a tastefully embroidered Rights to Ricky Sanchez logo on it. You will want it. I will be planting Rights to Ricky Sanchez logos all over John and Colleen's lovely apartment. The Big Barker bed is a proper mattress. It promotes enhanced energy and mobility levels in older dogs. Dasher is running away from me, bored. I am not doing a good enough job. It reduces wear and tear on younger dogs. That is Blitzen. Blitzen's already asleep. This is especially important in dogs over 50 pounds, since up to 88% of them will develop arthritis as they age. I don't want that. You don't want that. John and Colleen don't want that. It's engineered by experts to keep dogs youthful for longer, brings back older dogs to their feet. Creators of the 10-year warranty, foam won't flatten, or they'll replace it for free. 365-day at-home trial. Try it for a full year, and if for any reason you or your dog aren't thrilled, they will pay for UPS to bring it back to us for a full refund. That's pretty cool. Handmade in the USA. Hopefully Dasher and Blitzen will be using them soon, or John and Colleen will just have to deal with piss in their apartment from me and the dogs. Big Barker dog beds. The dogs left. I'm here with our Lakers correspondent in a new segment we're calling You Hate to See It.
Oh, God.
My girlfriend, Alyssa. Alyssa, how are we doing?
Oh, Well, we were at a steakhouse after an earthquake last night, and I screamed and put my head down on the table when we got a Woj bomb about Kawhi going to the Clippers.
So Kawhi and Paul George are Clippers. Both of them have chosen the Clippers over the Lakers, and I want to hear your experience as a Lakers fan and what you think about the Clippers, how you've grown up thinking about the Clippers.
Look, I have a personal issue with the Clippers. They're great. I like Patrick Beverley. I think they've done a lot of smart stuff. But when I was a kid, my dad used to lie to me and say we were going to Lakers games and then take me to the Clippers game. And the Clippers were so bad that their own fans would boo them every game. It was like so unpleasant to watch as a kid. So I would beg him not to take me if it was a Clippers game. And every single time I was lied to. So I just have like a personal, I feel personally attacked by the Clippers, basically.
That's fair. That's fair that you feel that way. It was quite a scene in the restaurant when we were really the only people in the restaurant screaming about it.
I think the Clippers are losers, and they're always going to be losers, and they've always been losers, and the Lakers know how to win. And I think LeBron James is still the best player in the NBA. I've always said it. You've always said it. And I think that Paul George is going to have a tough time going anywhere outside in Los Angeles without getting booed. So you're going to have to stay inside in beautiful, sunny California, Paul George.
Wow, that feels threatening. I will afford you some time to speak from a nonpartisan basis, and speak on the Lakers organization as it is currently constructed.
Look, it feels good that the Knicks are around to show everyone how much worse it could be. Magic Johnson, I personally think, should not be able to show his face anywhere without getting booed. And for some reason, we think it's a good idea to keep involving him in any sort of talks with players. That doesn't seem like a good strategy to me.
Didn't work this time.
No. It might have worked the opposite way.
Do you think he's sabotaging the Lakers from formerly the inside and now the outside?
I don't think he knows what he's doing. I don't think anyone knows why he's here. He's so lucky that Jeannie likes him so much, I guess. It's very strange. I'm not on board. I will give them a little bit of credit because they did get AD. I would love if we could do this in a more grounded, structured manner where there's not a trash fire every 5 seconds that everyone knows about. But, you know, we got two pretty good guys, which is better than the last, you know, few years. So
overall optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Optimistic. I'm a little worried about injuries, obviously. But now it's like I have to be less worried about injuries because we were able to get use that money we're going to use with Kawhi to fill out a few more people, including one Jared Dudley, who seems to be very spirited. So and seems to be up LeBron's, you know, butt pretty far. But I think that'll be good for the Lakers and antagonize the shit out of Patrick Beverley, maybe. You know, that could be a useful.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So we're not dead yet. We're doing okay. I would love if we could just keep it a little tighter in the front office. Maybe, you know, let Magic go do his thing and don't associate with him officially. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. He's fine. He can be like a guy who played that some people love, I suppose. But it's not, it doesn't bode well. And also it's kind of interesting because for me, it's like, LeBron has such a bad rep as far as, you know, dictating who he wants to play with and all of that. And so everybody who's coming for the Lakers front office as far as not being able to sign Kawhi, I'm not so sure that it was the Lakers front office entirely. I think it definitely is a factor, but Kawhi also may just not want to play with LeBron. And that's, you know, that's kind of the bed that we made when we signed him. So
what would a Lakers Sixers championship have done to our relationship? Who would do worse Lakers Sixers championship?
Oh, that's tough. I was going to say you, but it might be me. It might be me because I would go in being like, it's cool. Like, I've experienced 5 championships in my lifetime. Like, happy for you either way, blah, blah, blah. And then you would just be so insufferable, but also I would be so insufferable. And then
yep.
It's... I do think, even though it would be challenging for our relationship, if the Lakers and the Sixers played each other in a championship, I would be so happy for you guys if you went to the championship and just fucking beat the Clippers into the ground and got back at Kawhi. That'd be awesome. So if I have to root for something with this whole thing, I guess that's what I'm rooting for, is for you to just like steal their guaranteed win that Vegas like has such high odds on.
That's fair. And just for the folks listening at home, you wore a Lakers shirt to Summer League yesterday. What shirt were you wearing to the Summer League today?
I'll be wearing my Allen Iverson like number one pick shirt to the game.
Okay. This is why I'm not a journalist. I've been here with Jason Blevins. We've been talking about the Sixers and the Blue Coats, who I've previously called the 87ers. It's not their name. But I forgot to press the record button, which is what they teach you in journalism school that I did not attend. So there's a lot of looks at me. I'm here with Jason Blevins of the Painted Lines, covering the Delaware Blue Coats. I'm going to ask him to repeat everything he just said over the last few minutes. Talk to me about Norvell Pell, who the Sixers just signed to a two-way contract at age 26.
Yeah, so the first thing people are going to notice about Norvell is he is a rim runner. He is a rim protector. He can catch lobs, got great timing, and he just needs to be more consistent and stay out of foul trouble. We're talking about a guy that averaged three blocks a game in the G League in limited minutes, because they had so many centers in that rotation. I mean, he's a really useful player. He just needs to be consistent.
G League third overall player of the year. Defensive player of the year. Yeah, that answer sounded even better than it did the first time. I'll give you that. And we talked before about Norvell as a guy. What do his teammates think about him?
Everyone loves Norvell. He's got a great spirit, great smile. He and I caught up yesterday at practice, and he just got a great spirit about him. He's universally beloved by his teammates.
Sixers also had another guy in a two-way, a guy that I referred to as their fifth best player last season, Haywood Highsmith. I stand by it. They recently took him off of a two-way to open up a spot for Norvell and theoretically Mariel Shayok. What do we think about Highsmith? Do we think he's going to get a second chance? What can he expand in his game, or is he just this super role player for a middling G League team for the rest of his career?
Yeah, so he is a he's working with Lindsey Harding pretty much daily since the playoffs started, and he's been in the gym trying to develop his wing skills. He was a power forward in college. He's undersized. He's not going to be a power forward in the pros, but he's a security blanket. He can guard 1 through 4. He's just got to develop ball handling, and he's got to be able to get a consistent 3-point shot, which he just knocked one down. He's got a couple of threes today. And he's got to become a little bit quicker for his size. He's not a super athlete, but he is a Swiss Army knife on defense, and you love to see a guy trying so hard. Huge week for him in his career.
Yeah, that was a really nice sort of two-man game with Zaire to end in a Highsmith corner three. Highsmith as a dude, as like a learner, you said he's working with the Sixers assistant coach, Lindsey Harding. Do we think that he's capable of like putting that all together and finding his role in the two-way spot?
I do think so. I think the first thing that jumps out is just his willingness to learn and his humility. You see a lot of guys in games like this. I'm not going to name the guy who I think right now is just trying to get his own shot and ignoring everyone else on the team, but he is an unselfish player who's willing to learn. So, if anybody's going to be able to do it, it's a guy like him, because he's working his butt off.
Can we call the G League title for the Delaware Bluecoats right now?
We cannot, and here's why. Because they sacrifice wins all the time for development of and experimentation of scheme that translate to the Sixers program. And when you have G League players trying to implement the sort of switch 1 through 4 scheme and some of the offensive concepts that, you don't really have the talent for, doesn't always translate to wins. So I'm going to say a hard no on that.
That's fair. I appreciate the journalistic integrity. Final question. Do you think the Delaware Bluecoats would let me ring a sort of makeshift bell to sort of make up for the Sixers having not done it for years?
I will personally guarantee that you will get to bang the drum. It's a big drum in honor of the battalion in Delaware that was during the Revolutionary War. That's why they're named the Bluecoats. I will personally guarantee and assure with Larry Mely, president of the... Larry, if you're listening, that Mike and Spike, when they come down, make sure they get to bang the drum to open the game.
All right. I'll be there. Thanks, Jason.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right. I'm here with recent Clippers free agent signee, Kurt Geis. Kurt, you left the Sixers, and who are you going to miss the most?
Best part about being with the Sixers organization was that I got to cover the team. I grew up idolizing and watching. I had all the AI armbands and jerseys and shorts and stuff like that. So it was just great to be able to cover that team and photograph them and just like really be a part of it. I'm really going to miss the people. I worked with a lot of great ones. And it's hard to leave home after 29 years in Philadelphia, but it's not a new chapter, but a new act. And I'm really excited.
Did you know that we went to high school together?
Yeah, only like 27 years after the fact. Yeah. Small world.
Well, we're going to miss you, Kurt. We love you in Philly.
I'm going to miss you guys, too. I'm not dying. I'm still alive.
No, can confirm. And a quick break to talk about our original sponsor, LL Pivorsky Jewelers. You know him. You love him. It's LL. Come on. I don't actually know the full amount of rings that are sold at the moment. By LL Pivorsky Jewelers, to Writes to Ricky Sanchez listeners. It is the place that Writes to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged, but I don't know the number, and I don't believe the number even if I had the number. It's 120-something, 130-something. That's a lot of you. That's a lot of you that have gotten engaged in the last 6 years, and a lot of you who've chosen this lovely man to get engaged to, or at least a lot of fake Gmail accounts that LL has made. And if he's willing to do that, whatever it takes, then he's willing to do anything for a good piece of jewelry for you. He knows his stuff. You want to make an appointment, call him. Look, Spike didn't give me the ad copy for LL. It just says the things that I already know, which is he gives a generous donation to Coda by Kids and Providence Animal Center. That stuff I know. I know that he's at 707 Walnut in Philly. Always at llpivorsky.com. I know the phone number, which you should call him, is 215-627-2252. These are the things that I know. I know those things, but I forget the other stuff, and Spike doesn't have it in the Google Doc for me to do. So I'm going by memory. I know that LL has a lovely wife, Karen, a lovely daughter, Marissa, and a son, Jake, who is middling. He's been in this business since 1988. An intimate salon is what Google calls it. Custom engagement rings. He's got watches. He's got necklaces. He's got bracelets. He'd probably do a toe ring. I think he'd do whatever it takes. And he'd listen to you talk about your Sixers complaints. He'd listen to you talk about the Sixers front office. But call him. Let him know you're coming. Set up an appointment, because it's much better when he's there. Otherwise, he gets somebody else. And they're just... you know, they're great. The people there are great, but you want the guy. So give him a call, 215-627-2252, or visit him on his website, llpivorsky.com. And like I said, for every podcast episode, I don't know. I know that LL makes a generous donation to Coded by Kids and the Providence Animal Center, two great charities that we're very proud to be a part of. LL Pivorsky Jewelers, Spike really should do this one time. He gets to read from his secret copy. I get nothing. Back to the podcast, an interview with John Gonzalez. Here we go. Okay, I'm here in the car with the Ringer Zone, John Gonzalez.
You're a real journalist.
This is it.
You pulled out a podcast recording machine.
From 1978.
And you're holding it to my face as we drive, which I think is definitely up to code, and we're going to be fine.
If we die, then we will both die doing what we love, recording a shitty podcast.
Talking about Summer League.
That's right. So You just told me that you didn't watch any summer league basketball because you're, I think you're too big for summer league at this point. You're too much of the.
I watched the Zion RJ game, and then like everybody else was disappointed that that was it for Zion, and I didn't think RJ looked very good, and then that was it. There was like maybe 15 to 40 seconds of Sixers because I wanted to see what you saw in Shake, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
15 seconds?
For like 40. It might have been between 15 and 40.
That's all it needs. I think there's some Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to shake. There's a change of pace level. He doesn't get the separation, but I see it. That's not what we're here to talk about. We talked to other people about Summer League. We're talking to you about the state of the NBA. Kawhi leaves the East. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I became like a hot take radio caller. Kawhi leaves the East. It seems like it's Sixers, Bucks, and then everybody else. Is that how it feels to you?
Sixers, Bucks, and everybody else in the East. Yeah, I think so. I think, I want to see what happens still with Miami. I want to see, you know, Boston always kind of freaks me out. Like, even though they lost Kyrie, and you think, okay, well, you know, they should take a step back maybe. But maybe that's a Ewing theory addition by subtraction situation. I think Indiana's going to be good. And I like Indiana's team. They're plucky. They were plucky last year without Depot. And then, you know, they go and add Brogdon, who I know you guys despise. But no. I love Brogdon. I know you love him now, but, like, still secretly that you dislike him. Oh, and by the way, I had a thought. You should go to Indiana for bus/fly the process next year.
That's going to be the – for TJ, that's going to be
the – leader in the clubhouse? The leader, yeah, it's perfect for you guys.
When's the schedule released?
I don't know. Okay. I can't be in charge of knowing things in the summer.
That's fair. I was thinking earlier that Boston isn't done and that there might be like a Steven Adams or maybe like a LaMarcus Aldridge trade to happen with them. Thoughts on that, John?
You have to do that again because I was both paying attention and shifting.
I can't believe while you're driving and doing this podcast, you're paying more attention to the driving.
Yeah.
I said, should Boston or might Boston take a run at, because their center position is basically open.
They need somebody. And OKC now, like, it's possible, right, that they might hit the reset. And what do they get for Russ if they move Russ? And then if that's the case and you're in full rebuild all of a sudden teardown mode, then, yeah, moving Steven Adams would be great. I don't know. Where are you on Steven Adams? Like, a lot of people really like Steven Adams, and I like him as a human. He plays real hard. He doesn't shoot, and, like, I just wonder how much you can get out of him in today's NBA, and specifically, like, if you want to be a playoff team, because we see guys like that get marginalized in the playoffs every year.
I'm pro Steven Adams generally, and I think, especially for Boston, a team that is coming off a really shitty season of everything going wrong, having just a good guy in the clubhouse that's going to just work his ass off and be charming, could fill the void of shittiness that Kyrie left behind. I was also thinking LaMarcus Aldridge, if the Spurs want to try to go in a different direction, because Marcus Morris signing, maybe they just go like all wings and the guards that are fun. I don't know. What do you think about LaMarcus?
It occurs to me that
I think I want Boston to get the shitty guys that I don't want and pay them more than they should deserve.
What is Seinfeld's show, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
Yeah.
It occurs to, and also Carpool Karaoke. These things are now way more impressive to me.
Yeah.
Because it requires you to pay attention to two things at once.
Uh-huh.
And I'm evidently terrible at it.
Sure.
This is really awful.
That's fair.
I don't remember the last thing that you asked.
LaMarcus Aldridge.
What about LaMarcus Aldridge?
Do you think that Boston would make a run at him, and would that make them worse even?
I don't know if they would take a run at him. I don't, like, if I'm San Antonio, I think I've seen enough of LaMarcus Aldridge, but then who knows? Like, everything in that system depends on that system being in place and operating around what Pop wants, and if he thinks that, like, you know, LaMarcus is a good fit for that system, which evidently they thought before and have continued to think, then, you know, maybe they don't want to move him. I just wonder, like, how many more years they can go with the, yeah, we're okay with the mid-range. You know, like, I maybe there's some sort of math or margin that tells them while everybody else is tacking left to tack right will give them some marginal advantage. But
which the Sixers are doing with huge men.
Yes, I'm really interested to see that. Like, I'm very interested to see what, like, Kevin O'Connor, unbanned Kevin O'Connor, by the way. Shouts to KOC. yelled at me the other day that, not at me, but was like saying that this was a good thing that the Sixers had put this team together because he said small ball was always a myth. I don't agree with that, but I am very interested to see what happens when you have a team that was already big get bigger.
Do we think that, I want to ask you one more question about the East before we go to Sixers Bucks, because I do think that is what next season we'll be heading towards for the Eastern Conference. Is there a chance that we are collectively, as the dust settles of this thing, underestimating Toronto? I think losing Danny Green hurts, but they were still a really good team without Kawhi last year, and Siakam figures to continue improving, and Gasol staying, Lowry staying and still being helpful, Van Vliet being more productive, and Ananobi is a guy that I have loved since college, and hopefully when he's healthy next year, they still might be a top three or four seed in the East. Are we writing them off a little too soon and starting Masai Ujiri's like long-awaited rebuild before it's actually here?
Yeah, I wouldn't probably put them that high. I still want to see how the rest of the roster shake out, and like, you know, there's been reports that maybe the Pistons are in on Russ, which I don't know that that would necessarily make them better, but I just think that, you know, losing two of your five starters from that team that was very good, obviously, won a championship, like kept surprising the hell out of everybody, but like to lose Kawhi and Danny Green, you're going to need a shit ton more out of Pascal now. And like, I really like him, and I think he's going to get all the usage he can handle, and it's going to be his team, but putting them in the top four of the eight Eastern Conference teams would probably be optimistic for me, like super optimistic.
Okay. I still think that they're going to be there. I'm not scared of Brooklyn next season. I think
I'd have Brooklyn ahead of them. I'd have Indiana ahead of them. I'd have the Bucks and the Sixers. And then you'd have to debate, like, what's going on with the Celtics. You know, what are the Pistons going to look like? I do that. I'm just saying, like, you know, if the Pistons did go out and get Russ and they had Blake and Russ, wouldn't that be, like, ostensibly a better team than Toronto had just with those two guys? I mean, like, let's not forget, like, for all the shade that we give Russ, and rightfully so, for his, like, hero ball all the time and players, like, leaving and not ultimately wanting to play with him, he wills them to, like, 45-ish wins every year in a playoff berth, right? Like, that would be...
That's Pistons basketball, baby.
That would be an amazing season for the Pistons.
No, I don't see it. I think... The Raptors were a 600 team without Kawhi last year. I know it's regular season, but like that, if we're talking about the regular season, I still think they figure to be a good team. Anyway, enough with the Raptors. They did enough. They won their title. It's gone. Sixers and Bucks. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee loses Brogdon. Stays mostly Pat everywhere else. Chris Middleton stays. Eric Bledsoe stays. Brook Lopez stays for a more reasonable contract. DJ Wilson another year. To me, the Bucks were a very good team, but always a little fake. Always a little like we're trying very hard in the regular season. And then they came very close to taking a 3-0 lead against Toronto and ended up losing the next four. So maybe that's just the product of a couple bounces here and there, which we're obviously familiar with, bounces that don't go our way. Do we think that Milwaukee will be as good as they are next year? Will Giannis take a step forward? Because if they don't take a step forward, then like... I think the Sixers are better.
I mean, Giannis is a monster. We saw that this year, and surrounding him with, like, you know, Bledsoe didn't have at times a great playoff, so a great postseason. And I know that Middleton also, like, there were times when he sort of wasn't playing up to his potential. I really like Chris Middleton. He got a max deal or near. He's going to be, you know, a really good running mate with Giannis for a while. I think it depends a little bit on what you're going to get out of Bledsoe. But yeah, Brogdon, losing Brogdon is a big deal. Like, he was really good for them. There's a case to be made, and I've repeated this several times, but it's worth bearing and reminding people that, like, there's a case to be made that he was, after Giannis, their best player last postseason, along with, like, George Hill, right? So, yeah, I mean, there are parts of that team where if you don't get production out of those ancillary players, where all of a sudden you wonder how, you know, how good they could be or if they're vulnerable.
Yeah, I like George Hill. I will invoke the name of the band Danny Chow to say that I've been on board with George Hill's broad shoulders for as long as Danny has. But he's fucking old now. And to expect that George Hill is going to be the guy that he was for like a month and a half last season for the next 3 years, I think is a lot for Milwaukee to be counting on. The Sixers have matchup problems everywhere else. And they have, as much as we say, like, who on the Sixers is going to penetrate and who's going to get to the basket, when in the playoffs for Milwaukee, especially without Malcolm Brogdon, it's just Giannis at the top of the key. He can't shoot, and the Sixers can play him one-on-one with either Horford or Embiid or Simmons, and everybody else stays home and nobody's open. John?
Wait a minute. Is your argument here that they have somebody at the top of the key who can't shoot, and that's why they're vulnerable? Like,
I'm saying that's the only guy that they have. The Sixers have, you can go to Tobias Harris, you can go to Embiid in the post, you can go to Horford in the high post, Josh Richardson can create. Yeah, this is my house. I think that the Sixers have more options and availability, especially when Eric Bledsoe is folding in the playoffs like he always does.
I take back everything I said. It's the best podcast I've ever done. We should only get you to do takes in the car because that was an all-timer.
This is going to be a new feature for the podcast. Is I get someone in the car, I hold them hostage, and I make them do a podcast with me.
I did this in my living room last year, and it was probably way less dangerous.
Okay. All right, well, thanks, John. Fun car podcast. We'll have you back in your car some other time. I'm here in our hotel room drinking wine with converted Sixers fan and lead actress on the new Lil Dicky FX show, Taylor Mijak, who I also went to Ithaca College with, and the pride of Downingtown East High School and co-creator and director of American Vandal, Tony Yacenda, and they are at their first summer league. And I feel for some reason like I am advertising for Summer League. Like I am part of the wing that like tries to get people here for whatever reason. How is your first Summer League going?
Oh, so lovely. Really, you made it sound so amazing. And it's turned out to be very cool. But it's also in Vegas. So that helps a lot.
And how would you say multiple basketball games, primarily bad, is going for you, Tony?
It's a lot of basketball. I think for me, it's a little bit more anthropological, a little bit more cultural than you. Seems like you're doing a lot of homework and memorizing a lot of names and playing styles that will never realistically be relevant in a
thank you
in an NBA context.
Yes,
it's what makes your podcast fun to listen to, but also something
unlistenable.
Yeah, something I can't contribute with at all. And sometimes, like, that's when I go to the 1.5 speed when you're going to like names I will never hear again.
That's good.
So Taylor, now you're a new Sixers fan. You guys are dating, and you've bought in.
Yes, bought in.
Who are some of the guys that just from a few watches in summer, like we've seen two games. Who have you liked watching and who is exciting to you?
I really like Shake Milton, which is good news because I liked his name before I saw him. So that was really exciting. I was also very pumped to see Zaire and that he also delivered for me. So that was very exciting. Those are my two top. Oh, who did I think was someone is very cute that I only saw today. Mm-hmm. And then I looked him up on Instagram. I'll try to remember exactly who it was.
A lot of cute boys on the team.
A lot of cute boys, which is primarily what I was looking out for, because I'm way more familiar with that instead of like basketball skills. I could like decide who is cute or not cute pretty quickly. Mm-hmm.
Is it Matisse?
Oh, I do like Matisse. Yeah, you know what? It was. And he has like a really great Instagram. It is Matisse. Wow, you know my taste so well.
Well, he's a good looking guy.
And it wouldn't be a Sixers Summer League without a little bit of nepotism. Tobias Harris's younger brother, Terry Harris, was on the team. And Taylor, you took to him, if I recall correctly.
I did. I loved him. I thought it was so cute that they're brothers. And I love alliteration. So I love that they both have their T names. It's so cute. Big, big fan. I just want them to be best friends and brothers and play side by side is like my dream. Could that realistically happen? Is it or no?
It depends, I would say, on the level of pacifying Tobias they need to do. They gave him a whole lot of money, so saying, here's a bunch of money and also we'll hire your brother might be much, but it could happen. And he seemed like a nice boy, and that's important.
Did you think he was skilled and promising, or were you like, oh, this is just cute?
He didn't play a ton,
right.
And he didn't play that well. You could tell that he is a shooter, but I think he was nervous in the same way that you guys are maybe nervous to be on this podcast.
Correct.
So you can get the vibe. Like, imagine trying to shoot a basketball right now. Like, the way, as nervous as you guys are, that'd be crazy.
I probably feel exactly like how all the players felt today, showcasing their talents for the first time, their first NBA minutes. That's exactly how I feel right now. So,
Tony, you've rang the bell.
Yes.
Before a Sixers game, and that deeply wounds me. And I want to know what that experience was like for you and how it feels to hold that over my head.
I remember when we first talked about it and you were talking about how you wanted to ring the bell. I'm like, you're delusion. This was in the Colangelo era, though, and you were a public enemy. You were anti-establishment.
Sure.
But now you're crossing over, and you should ring the bell. That would be the ultimate crossover, other than I guess you guys on a parade float somewhere.
That'd be good.
Or us on like a 10-day contract even.
Yeah. But yeah, the ringing the bell is the coolest thing that will ever happen to me. And it was a little bit embarrassing because I know how, you know, undeserved and how unexcited everybody was in the arena. But it was Blazers-Sixers 2 years ago. So it was a good game. Sixers won.
Walk us through the moment when they announce Tony Yacenda and four or five people in the crowd react. What is that like?
I was just like, don't trip. Don't make this any more embarrassing than it has to be. I loved it though. It was looking up and pretending that I belong, was, yeah, something I'll always look back on.
How hard did you slam? Did you slam the bell?
The guy said harder than anybody does. Like, people know it's a show, but I just wanted to, I wanted to go as hard as possible because that was something to make it interesting in my mind. And I think it was, they said a little too hard, maybe. Can we just, like, break down how crazy it is, though, to I'm a comedy writer, and I directed music videos for Lil Dicky, who I think is, like, he's beloved by the players on the team and by the Sixers themselves. So, like, vicariously, that carried more street cred than it probably should. And it must have been a slow day, and I slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
And
nobody said anything.
Yeah, I think I just like to envision like the Christmas party. Like, who was the one who let the comedy writer guy on? Like, couldn't we have found like a military veteran or like a kid with cancer or anybody with like any celebrity? And like, yeah, we thought it was a good idea at the time. I don't know.
Now you're new to the Sixers. Mm-hmm. But you care deeply about him. How did you take it when you found out Jimmy Butler would not be on the team anymore?
I found out about Jimmy Butler about like an hour after I had found out about JJ. And that really broke my heart. I was mentally preparing myself. It's so tough. This year, he's made me fall in love with all of these guys. And then a bunch of them just leave suddenly. And then I'm so not used to that coming from any other sport, I feel like. They don't just, like, suddenly leave, especially in the middle of the season or when you're just, like, within a year.
Who's the first one? Shamit, right?
Yeah, Shamit really bummed me out. And I didn't know that could be a thing. That happened in, like, the middle of the night, right? Mm-hmm. And when we got Boban and Tobias, that was the like middle of the night thing, and I woke up and I was like, what? I've just started to learn everybody and like everybody, and now it's changing. And I really thought JJ was a safe person to be obsessed with because he is A, hot, like I said, that's really important to me, and B, he was older and he seemed like he was kind of like a leader, but he would also like, I don't know, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated and he was gone. So I don't know. I felt very already bummed out and discouraged. And then I found out about Jimmy leaving and I was like, whatever. Nobody stays. There's no loyalty. Nobody gives a fuck what I think or who I care about. So it was a negative day. I was texting him and his family and was like, why did you guys make me do this? Why did you make me care? Because it just bums me out that everyone's leaving. Although I'm very excited. I'm mostly optimistic now. I've yo-yoed back.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like that answer.
Thank you.
Tony, as someone who has directed basketball scenes before, in season two of American Vandal on Netflix, which I can recommend. Do you think the Sixers are the favorites in the East this season?
Well, from my expert opinion, yeah, Bucks aren't going to add anybody huge, right? Like, I can't look at any roster that really scares me at the in the East at this point, I think.
Yeah, I feel good about that. Okay, that's another summer league in the books. I am alone. Spike may never return. Okay. Am I down with TTP? I guess. I know Lickface? What is this? Who are we doing this for? Anyway, run the jewels.
We are the murderous pair. Dead with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Woo. Step into the spotlight. Woo. Uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cump in the clouds on a missile to...